Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 37, Confessions of a Market Maker. I'm your co-host, Ray, a.k.a. All Day Ray, a.k.a. the Low Float Goat. And I'm joined here by my rakish co-host, former market maker of 20 years and present-day retail trader. There's only two things in life this man hasn't seen: a turtle with speed and a woman that he needs. I'm talking about the proper villain, the House Street legend, JJ.
How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. And today, our guest began trading stocks in college during the dot-com boom. After years of developing and refining his strategy, he found Bulls on Wall Street to help teach others how to remove the noise and gain an edge in the market. He speaks internationally at trading and entrepreneurial events. A Michigan native and a fellow Floridian, I'm talking about Kunal Desai. Kunal, how's it going?
What's going on? I didn't know you were in Florida. Now, my side of Florida, they don't even count it as Florida. It's like a whole nother world. But
you must be in the panhandle then, I would assume.
I am in the panhandle.
Yes, yes. You know what? You know, it's funny, Kunal. You know, I was thinking this the other day. People love to poke fun at Florida, and probably, like, rightfully so. But, you know, that's cool. They can do that wintertime, huddled around the fire, mittens, wool socks. I'm going to be in the lagoon, lounging, you know? How do you like living in Florida, being from, being from the north?
So Florida is pretty cool. Like, I cruised the whole coast of Florida basically looking for – like some kind of beach town to live in. And I didn't think this would be the spot, but it just ended up being the spot. I just can't do South Florida. It's the traffic, the drugs, the women, you know. I mean.
A lot of trouble. Yeah, that's for sure.
It's too much trouble. It's hard to get anything done. And I got to, you know, when you get too much traders, like, you know, we have to watch out for ourselves because there's, like, you know, certain times of year we just have time on our hands. And then there's certain times of year you don't have time on your hands. Mm-hmm. You got to be together. I spent a couple months in South Florida seeing if I could pull it off. I just didn't do it. Like, I don't have the discipline, I think, to, like, you know, not go out and do stuff as, like, a single guy. But the other thing is, like, I'm, like, a daytime guy. And, like, I spend a lot of time in Miami. It's, like, you meet friends or, like, girls or, like, whoever. Uh-huh. And people be like, yeah, like, let's go catch dinner at 11 and then, you know, we'll go out. And it's like, huh? Like, I'm trying to, like, go out at, like, 3 p.m. and then, like, catch dinner at 5.
Oh, my God. You're in Del Boca Vista, man. Jeez.
Like, that's how I like to do it. Like, I like to be out. Like, I like to be on the beach or the boat, like, daytime stuff.
That's nice, too. When you were saying catch dinner at 11, then go out, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember those days. Those were good times.
It doesn't make me feel good for my prospects as a future as a trader being down here. like you said, a lot of distraction, but then this man helps keep me in line. So Kunal, you know, before we jump into trading talk, I see you're a fellow workout enthusiast. What role does working out play for you in your life?
You know, it comes and goes. Like, there's times where, like, I work out every day, mm-hmm. but, like, it's, like, more a matter of, like, are you working out or are you just, like, trying to, like, right, stay fit and keep healthy? Mm-hmm, and I think I'm now towards, like, more of the spot where, you know, I work out just to, like, have fun, like, versus, like, you know, lift weights and get buff.
Sure.
But it does, you know, I think it's important because if you really look, like, I mean, it depends. But if you look at the new age, probably, like, the 40-year-old and under, like, really, really good traders that, like, you know, you would see on social media and stuff. Like, most of them are, like, in really, really good shape. Like, they're, like, they're, like, really active. And so there's just something to be said about, you know, like, if you're feeling good, you're probably thinking good.
Right.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's good to stay active. I've been on both scales.
Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, I'm not trying to go to the gym and, like, murder some bench presses and stuff anymore. Like, you know, for me, it's, like, you know, I'll go a few times a week, but, you know, beach volleyball, paddle boarding, kayaking, you know, playing basketball. Like, you know, I'm doing something for a few hours a day, but it's very rarely, like, I'm just, like, in the gym, like, I got to work on my glutes, guys.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I try and toe the line, Kunal. You know, like, I like to look good. For the physique, a little bit for athleticism, but I get that competitive drive sometimes, and I want to put on the big weight, but I want to preserve my body at the same time. It's like I'm not competing for anything out here, So.
The simplest stuff really works, man. I had this trainer once, and he used to play college football, and he was in the NFL for a couple of years and blew out his knee. And man, he was cool. He was like a motivational speaker. He was like Eric Thomas. He'd be like, he'd take me out to the beach some days. I'm like, no weights today. He's like, nah, man, today we're doing something different. And I'm like, what?
Right.
He'd make me sit there and do push-ups and dips like for like an hour. And I'm like, what? prison workout, man. He's like, how you think people get so – I'm like, don't I need some weight, like some heavy stuff? He's like, come on, man. How you think they get buff in prison?
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
That's definitely what he would do. He's like, man, you're gonna be running on this beach back and forth, doing push-ups, sprinting back and forth, do some pull-ups, and some of that stuff really makes sense. Sometimes you just gotta keep pushing.
Well, yeah, and it's good the older you get not to put on too much weight. I mean, I was 275, 280, pretty solid when I was young, and I was powerlifting and stuff like that. And your joints, it takes a toll on,
275 is a defensive line.
I was a bouncer. I was 6'2", 275, 280, back in the days.
But where
I grew up, I was the second smallest of my buddies, right? I grew up in this Midwestern farm place. Everyone's 350, 370, 400, right?
Man, that's amazing. At least you have great meals.
Kunal, this guy would smoke Marlboro menthols between sets and then go squat sick plates. This guy was a freak back in the day. But
that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, he was a freak back.
Not enough people do stuff like that. Like, anytime now, like, I see somebody, like, just smoking, like, a Marlboro Red, like, outside a bar or something. Because, back in the day, like, you would see, like, even in Michigan, it'd be, like, negative 10 degrees. But 30 people out there.
Exactly.
With their fingers falling off, trying to get, like, two puffs in.
Oh, I know, I know.
You're like, man, those people, they're troopers.
And oh, yeah.
One guy like just kind of just chilling out there, and everybody's judging him. I don't give a shit. Like, everybody's judging him, giving him the stink eye, and I walk by and I'm like, man, that's a cool motherfucker. Like, I joined with my friends and judge me for it.
That's funny. Yeah. The people outside smoking like -5. Yeah, ridiculous.
Well, up here it was like -45, and there's outside smoking. It's crazy.
You got to get that fixed. You got to get that fixed. So, yeah. So, Kunal, so for those just finding out about you for the first time, just tell us briefly how you got started in trading.
Yeah. So, I would say I got lucky in a handful of things of right place, right time, which is, kind of half of life anyways.
Yep.
I started trading, or started getting interested in stocks because of my dad. My dad is a first generation immigrant. He's an engineer by trade, but like almost all first generation Indians, immigrants in general, they got their hands in like everything. They're like trying to get something going, right, for themselves.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
that's why they came here. Otherwise, they just stay in India and something else. So my dad was like, he's engineer by day, and he's coming home. He's like, I got a real estate license. He's selling like Cutco knives. He's doing Tupperware parties. If they had sex toys back then, he'd be doing sex toy parties, like whatever he could, just like make some money. So he's like, I'm working as, software programmer by day, and I'm Indian Batman by night.
Exactly.
So like that, he's taking real estate classes, and he ended up buying a house in 20 years, but he's trying, right?
Yeah.
He's doing this one and that one and putting on this and, he also was like always trying to invest or trade, and he was, got his hands in all sorts of things. He's like, oh, I'm going to try penny stocks. I'm going to do this. And it was cool because like, I got to see my dad, like one day he'd be like, son, today I buy you a pony. And then the next day he's like, you motherfucker, you better get a scholarship. Okay. I know you got this B plus. Your teacher told me you get better get a scholarship. And I'm like, Dad, I'm like 8 years old. Like,
exactly. Oh and my God.
Like the ups and downs, right? Like somebody trying to trade. And it was pretty cool. So I got my interest from him trying all these things, and also kind of my entrepreneurial side from him. And then just like that dot-com boom, you know, and the change, the advent of the internet is just right place, right time of like, here I'm going to college. And, you know, most people talk about college as like, you know, like I'm studying and coursework. But like one thing in college that's different than high school, like high school is like very regimented. Like you have to be at school at 7 o'clock. You have basketball practice at 4:30. You have this and that. You have places to be. Where in college, like you don't really have any place to be. Like, yeah, you have stuff you got to get done. You don't really have any place to be. And like they have, you know, in all the dormitories at Michigan State, like computer labs. And I'm like, man, this is like, this, what is this computer lab stuff, you know? Indian guy, like I'm like, my dad's a computer programmer, you know, or computer software engineer. I'm like sitting in this computer lab, you know, downloading illegal songs on Napster and, and like, right. And Napster, reading Jim Jubak articles on MSN Money. And I was like, I'm like trying to figure this stuff out. And so it was like, if you read like a lot of books of like how people got really, really good, like there was always like some story of like that where it's like right place, right time. And then they had an opportunity to like, just like sit and spend a lot of time like doing something. Mm-hmm. You know, and having a computer lab like on the floor of my dorm, like I had just like hours every day where it's like, you know, I mean, I know what I'm doing, but I'm, you know, reading and studying and like playing on this internet thing and looking at books. And frankly, I just stunk. Obviously, I'm a kid and I'm taking whatever money. My dad gave me a couple grand. It was gone. And he gave me a couple more grand. It's gone. Then he was like, I was taking my tuition money and trying to trade with it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, my dad is old school. So like when my tuition was due, you know, he's not sending a check. He's like, why would I spend 30 cents on the stamp when I can just, right? You just drop it off.
Exactly.
So I would go to like, you know, drop my tuition off. I'd have like all like $10 and $20 bills. Like why he doesn't have other types of cash, I don't know, but they were always tens and twenties. So it's like, you know, tuition at times probably like $6,000-$7,000, you know, for the year. So you pay it every half year. So I just had like all this cash and I'm like, ooh. You know, like they're, you know, they're not going to send me the collection if I don't have, you know, like it's on time. So like, I always had these like schemes, like, man, I'm just double this money. And then I'll take out the half, pay the tuition off, and you know, my dad will never notice.
Yeah.
So I was playing these games of fire with money all the time. And in the end, like that didn't work either. You know, I made actually some good money for a while and then I just blew it all on a vacation and then in the market too. So by the time I was done with school, like I had like really no college skills and I still was not a trader. So like it was, you know, off to the job world, but I'm not qualified for anything because I just sat in a computer lab, looking at pornos, downloading Napster, reading MSN Money articles and going on, you know, Yahoo Finance chat boards, right? Message boards. So I got no skills beyond these like handful of things. So I ended up having a job as like a door-to-door salesman selling phone service for SBC, you know, Southwestern Bell Company. And that was actually like, it, you know, it was really heinous because you can't really, all my friends were getting like real jobs. Like, oh, I'm working in finance, New York. Yeah. Another buddy is like, oh, I'm moving to the big city in Chicago. You know, got a job at this, you know, at Citadel, like, you know, like kind of stuff like that. And they're like, what about you? Because I was always known as the smart one. I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to be doing a little door-to-door sales.
Yeah.
I wouldn't tell anybody that, right? I'd be like, oh, you know, direct business-to-business consulting.
Dress it up. Yeah. Like,
hey, can I have the pitch? Hello, I'm Kunal Desai from SBC. I'd like to upgrade your phone service. And oddly enough, though, like, I actually got really good at that. And that ended up being probably the best job I could recommend to anybody because like that job, like I ended up, you had to do a lot of cold calling, but like face to face, walking in.
That's good.
If anybody's ever been to Michigan, like in Michigan, all business owners are minorities, like Arabs, Chaldeans, Indians, you know, Jewish people, the gas stations, liquor stores, small business owners. So like in a million different languages, right? And they all work with their family. So it's, you know, snowing. I'm in my $20 Burlington Coat Factory suit.
Ah, I remember those.
That I got on Telegraph for like 20 bucks. It was a buy one, get one free. The going to these businesses, it's cold, you're walking around, and then you're like coming and meeting all different walks of people who are ornery as all gets. It's because it's winter time and you're walking in their business, you're not going to buy anything. You're going to sell them something, right? So you're the most hated person around. So, you know, you say, hey, can I talk to the business owner, decision maker? Everybody's like, he's not here. I'm like, come on, man, that guy in the back, look at him. He's there sitting there. Right now, he's sitting there right now with some lamb kebabs. Like, you tell me that guy's not the boss. You tell me the boss is not the guy sitting there eating lamb kebabs. Come on, it's noon. So I ended up getting like really good at just like going up to people and starting conversations without like getting murked, right? Like, you gotta get some thrown at. And that helped me a lot in my actual business, because like my business is, you know, obviously teaching people how to trade stocks, but a good portion of it is also, you know, and selling and, you know, talking to people, right? Teaching.
Right, all right.
Yeah. Customer relations. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
That failure in trading and not having any skills, like sneakily actually worked out really well, because like I ended up with this awesome skill set. I recommend that for anybody that's like, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21 years old.
Yeah. It's great. Yeah.
You get a cold calling business to business sales job, like you're going to learn how to wheel and deal.
Yep.
You can even use that to pick up chips. Like, you know, it's
true. Like,
it makes
It makes sense.
I was going to say, cause you are a good speaker, high energy.
Yeah.
I've done sales previously before. Like I was playing poker part-time, but I was doing sales on the side, and you learn to interact with all different types of people. And it's like, like you said, like picking up a chick, Kunal, it's a sales pitch. You're telling her on you. Yeah, right or wrong?
It's just a series of tall tales that are not lies, but bordering on them.
Yeah. Embellish.
It's a bordering on the edge of truth.
Yeah. Well, it's all three of us then, because my first job in the market was selling advertising to stock promoters and public companies. So that, I did 100 calls a day.
Great. Look at that. All of us degenerate beginnings.
The second part, though, is the luck was, you know, once I was done with the door-to-door selling, you ended up with an office job, and man, office job was like, oh my gosh, like I'm out of the snow.
Yeah.
Now I'm like able to start like kind of like trading again, but now I also have a little bit of capital. So I ended up crushing that door-to-door sales thing. Mm-hmm. Now I'm like back at the computer, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm back at the computer. And it happened to be like, this is like now like, you know, social media is like starting to happen. Like it's like just starting to sprout its wings. And the first like kind of trading blogs started popping up that you'd never seen trading blogs before. There were no such thing as blogs in like 2003, 2004, 2005. Mm-hmm. You know, all of a sudden, like I'm sitting at the desk all day and I come across like Brian Shannon. Like he had an Alpha Trends blog spot. So it was a Google blog spot, a blog. And it was like, what is this technical analysis stuff, right? Like, I've been doing all sorts of stuff, but like he all of a sudden had like some different stuff going on there, a lot more structure. And I'm like sitting there reading all his stuff while I'm at work. And then I ran into like my own mentor, Paul. And, you know, Paul became my mentor for one just straight reason was, you know, I'm like looking at his blog and I'm reading it. And I'm like, Paul, the market's here, Paul. And then you go to the bottom and it's just Paul Singh. And I'm like, ching, ching. Uh-oh, we got another Indian. So I got so pumped. I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy's an Indian. Like he's gonna take me under his wing and be the dad I always wanted. And so I was so pumped. So I'm like leaving comments. He was being really nice on his, you know, blog post. And this guy knew his charts. So then all of a sudden though, you know, I'm like, hey, can you coach me? And he's like, not a chance. And I'm like, come on. Like, he's like, no, like, I don't do that. Like, I have a blog, you know, and Paul was a by day. He's a prosecutor in Minnesota. He's a lawyer. And, it, you know, he like a, plays poker all day. So that's like his thing. He's like, I don't want any of this other stuff.
Oh.
Being team. Hello?
You still there?
Yeah. Hold on. It says my connection's stable. It might be mine. Is it back?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, now I can hear you.
Sorry, we're in vacation season here, and it's like, I mean, I got this fiber thing, and it don't even work good. Scamming. So, yeah, like I was saying, like, Paul was, you know, Paul took me under his wing, and that's how I got good. You know, he was able to put some structure around me, and then right around that time, like, Twitter came out. It was 2007, and when Twitter came out, it was a free-for-all of the world, you know, like, now all of a sudden everybody's got a voice, you know, and that kind of changed the game. It's a, it was the right place at the right time again.
Mm-hmm. Nice. That's really good. Mm. It's cool. It's interesting because my first job in the market was given to me by an Indian guy too, a mining promoter. But yeah, same thing. He taught me my first rule. JJ, never buy stock. You always sell it. Get given it free, you know.
Hey, JJ, question. From people all the time. I said, you know, and it, I don't have an exact answer. I know what I tell my students just because it's like how a parent would tell somebody. So like I, you know, but you don't really know if it's the truth or not, right? You just, it's what needs to be said. So I got like all these students, I grade trades, you know, they have their journals. I look at these trades. I'm like, what the heck happened to this damn trade? Like, like this is supposed to be like a 20 cent risk. You have, you lost $2 on it.
Yeah.
And so they, the same thing always happened, you know, and it's like always the cheesiest student, they'll say it. They say it. I get like a new, I get a batch to say, well, I didn't want to put a stop loss in because the market makers will take it out. So I don't think there are any market makers anymore. Not in the traditional way like there used to be. Like,
well, that, there's, it's very different. It's very different now. We do have market makers and they are wholesalers, but there are very few of them. And all their execution is done algorithmically and everything's done by computers. Now, in the old days, they used to have hundreds of market makers that would provide liquidity. And now I know in CME rules, the market makers aren't allowed to see the stops. But if you look at the structure of any kind of a stock over the day, using a TPO chart, you can really easily see where the heck all the stops will be. But market makers, because they're just running order flow. So they're taking your stop, not because they want to, it's just there. Just think of them as a semi going down the highway and you're trying to pick up daisies in the middle of the highway and every once in a while you're gonna get hit and run over.
I gotcha. So that's always been the thing. I'm like, come on. Like, you think you're like your 20 shares of Tesla?
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah. I know. That's what I always think. Like, yeah. I don't care about you. Yeah.
I'm working 2 million shares for SAC Capital, and oh, this guy's got 20 Teslas. I'm going to take him out. No, that's no.
Market to get your shares?
No. That's not how it works. But it's very funny. I am really surprised because I was always an institutional guy. My clients asked me, what was the volume? How much did I sell, right? My job was to create liquidity so they could dump positions. Here's the thing. When I got into retail, I was shocked at how many people are flipping around in these markets and they have no clue how they actually work or function, right? It baffles me to this day, but I find it quite fascinating.
It's amazing. I mean, people are, they like to wheel and deal. I got a new student of mine. I'm like looking through his stuff. I'm like, I'm like, you had 300 executions today. Like, yeah, man, there was a lot of action. I'm like, yeah. 300 executions on your $28,000 account, right?
Holy. Like,
and it's like, and you made $200.
Wow. See, and that the non-commission thing is just getting people to churn, right?
I've been telling them, I tell my guys not to go the non-commission unless they're just in a starter account, like with a few thousand dollars and they're like trying to test things out, you know, then it'll save you some cash because you don't at least worry about having to make the commission. you know. But for anybody else, I don't know. Like, some of it's okay. Like, I have, you know, I have accounts at all brokers, you know, whether it's, you know, commissions or not commissions. And yeah, like, if I, you know, see a stock that has like no spread and no easy liquidity, then yeah, I'll use my E-Trade or Ameritrade. But I, you know, any 90% of trades, I can't.
Yeah.
And the data is freezing like nonstop. Like, I don't know.
Oh, is it really?
I don't know if anybody uses like Thinkorswim, but I don't. It doesn't work. But like, you know, everybody loves, like, every new person I run into, and even a lot of professional traders, they just swear by it, right? It's like their baby.
Yeah.
And newbies love Thinkorswim because, you know, it's got like all these little trinkets on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, you get some guy, and he's like, wow, like, you can watch CNBC from my
That's the only reason I have it.
Amazing, right?
Yeah. So, right. It's free.
People like it because it's got a lot of, like, little windows or whatever.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's because it's owned by a Canadian bank now, right?
It just freezes. It's Ameritrade's platform.
But it's owned by Toronto Dominion Bank, and trust me, they are not traders. Okay.
It's like my whole chat room every morning when the market is wild, around between 9:30 and 9:45, it's like always 10 people. Like, hey, is your Thinkorswim frozen?
I love that time because the pre-market, that's when we advertise. We whip the price up, and then your software, like Trade Ideas, catches it. And we're all like, come here. We give you a good price, right? And then all the retail comes. And then we get them nice and long into that open, and they just jam them, right? So, but if Thinkorswim is freezing all the time, that's not good.
The data everywhere is a little bit been herky-jerky, you know, for the most part. Like, E-Trade, same thing. Thinkorswim, really? Same thing. Ameritrade's just gone off the rail. And their trading volumes have gone up. If you look at, like, any stats, like, trading volumes have gone up, like, 300-400% at some of these places. Because you got a double-edged sword. You have coronavirus, so the people are at home just jerking it all day, and then you have free commissions.
Now, have they gotten rid of the PDT rule yet? Now, because I trade futures mostly, so.
Ooh, do you?
Yeah.
I've been diving my head in it. Not futures, though. Micro futures. PDT
that's
rule
what
is
I, that's what I That's what I teach, yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
I'd seen that on your Twitter. I didn't know if it was you or, you know, Ray J that was rolling with the micro futures.
No, well, he's there too. He's partners. We're partners. He's the young guy. I'm the old salty dog. Yeah.
Actually, and I've never been a futures guy because, like, I like the action of, like, hunting for, like, what's going to be the big winner rather than looking at, like, a handful of things.
Yeah, see,
futures is really cool because, like, I get smoked out trading regular futures. It's just too much leverage for me.
Yeah.
And frankly, because I'm trading stocks all day and swing trading, day trading, you know, crypto trading, you know, having, like, you know, a couple, you know, 2-3 MQ contracts and, like, losing track of them, like, it's like really can put you in some pain.
Oh, yeah. MQ, it's, you know, I like, see, I'm 52. I got a heart condition, so I got to chill. So I like the futures guy. I just trade the E-mini every day, and I teach the E-micro with Ray. And,
nice. So the MNQ is amazing. That's what I've been trading, the MNQ.
Okay.
And because, you know, the SPY is like, you know, that's still 1980s now. But the
NASDAQ, right? Hey, the 80s were a good time.
No, but in general, the NASDAQ just has more range on it. I find the moves are cleaner. Or, you know, SPY moves.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Yeah, you'll have to come by and check us out and say hi sometime.
Yeah, but that's cool. I didn't even know about these micro futures till a couple months ago. And, I saw it on Twitter. It's probably from your Twitter. I'm like, let me check out this, like, micro future thing. And, man, it's pretty fun. And it's, like, really smooth. And, man, you can have trades where you have, like, I mean, such minimal risk on it, you know.
Exactly. It's like training wheels, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like, what, $5 risk per point or whatever.
It's a buck. Yeah. It's a buck and a quarter a tick, right? It's so, you know, you can learn how to trade properly without, you know, and if you have a bad day, you lose $50, and that's if you're trading, you know, like you're drunk or something. You know.
No, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Kunal, I'm curious to see how your trading strategies compare and contrast from when you first started to present day.
That's a good one.
Oh, you know, that's actually really cool. So in general, like I have, you know, the same patterns per se, if you really say you're using patterns, but I'm a momentum trader, trend trader. Mm-hmm. The one thing that's changed over, I would say, last like probably 5-6 years, you know, primarily before I was a small cap trader. Now I very rare, I would say like 0.5% of my volume goes in, you know, anything under $10. Mm-hmm. Where now my trading style is more into like large caps, mid caps, but still momentum trading, trend trading. You know, the one thing that's changed in the market, which is awesome, and it's actually helped me quite a bit, you know, the advent of these algos and HFTs and stuff like that's helped retail traders mm-hmm. tremendously.
Definitely.
They've helped retail traders tremendously because now you can have $500 billion companies move around like no other, right? We were 10 years ago, like when I started Bulls on Wall Street, you had to trade like really shitty companies to like get like good range.
Exactly.
But also to like stay away from, you know, certain things. Now, like you can trade regular stocks. Like, you know, I trade like this, you know, some of these tech companies like FSLY, like this thing was around like 15-20% a day on 20 million shares in volume. And it floats like 70 million. Like how that happens every day, I don't know. But like now you can trade regular companies and still get crazy good range. And it's awesome for retail traders and new traders, especially like smaller account people, because they're ingrained in their head. Like I got to trade penny stocks, small cap stocks, $5 stocks, low floats, junk, like all this turd stuff. And they think that's your only chance. And the failure rate of 99.99% versus 95% for everybody else. Right.
Exactly.
So it's 500 times different. Well, like now, like, you know, like you're trading something like this FSLY, you know, it's got a $10, you know, it's like an $80 stock, but it's got a $10 intraday range. So like I tell like my guys all the time, like, look, even if you're, you know, you ain't got no money, you're trading 100 shares of this thing. The thing moves around back and forth, $10 up and down.
Yeah.
Even if you're trading 100 shares of it, guess what? Like you can make a few $100 off that. You don't have to have the whole $10, right? You got to catch the meat of the move.
Yeah.
And so you get your 3 or 4, but you can do it like with safety. I can put a stop loss in of 50 cents. I can risk $50 to make 200. You know, I can risk $30 to make 100. Where, you know, in small caps, it's, you know, whether you have a small account, bigger account, like, you know, if that thing dumps, you're going to lose $1,000. Like,
exactly.
It's just the way it goes.
The and other thing.
Really.
True.
Yeah, so Kunal, I think I've heard you say, I don't know if you still do, do you use trade ideas?
I do use trade ideas, probably not as, but it's not a daily thing.
Okay, because I was going to ask how deep you dive into, you know, it's a powerful program. I was going to.
Trade ideas is amazing, but it's, for me, it's like I do my homework at night. Like my plan for the most part, I mean, it's set. Like I know what I want to do, like what I want to trade, how I want to do it. So in the end, like, you know, like trade ideas, like I got some cool filters and there are people there. Awesome. They'll help you with anything. But then it's like, I turn it on and I got all these like frigging new ideas, but the, you know, always the problem with scans are this, the, you know, they shows up on your scan after the primary move happens anyway. So what's the friggin' point, right? So I want to do a real deep dive, you know, at night. I want to do a real deep dive in the morning before the market opens. And then I would say like 90% of my game plan is set in stone.
Okay.
And I leave a 10% variance in terms of like, okay, I'm going to find some new stocks. You know, maybe there's something with some fresh news out that comes out. So I'll keep those things on, like just so like maybe there's like a stock that has like a midday news out, right? But that's like, you know, this is a rare occurrence. That's not your bread and butter. You can't make a whole system off like, okay, I'm going to get like random news events in the middle of the day. So I'll use that stuff, but it's really small part of what I do. because it makes people, frankly, overtrade. And all scanners in general, the learning curve is like, the learning curve is crazy. So then now it's like, what's, you know, is it really worth it? Like, versus like, okay, I do my homework at night. I go through a thousand charts. I train my brain to what works, what's working in this market, what type of stocks are working in this market, what sectors are hot in this market. Mm-hmm. I find 5 to 10 names that look incredible. I focus in on them and I find the exact perfect entries to get in them, and I don't for my plan. I think that that has a lot higher probability of success than you waking up in the morning, turning on some damn $200 a month scanners and thinking like, now I got some ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, like, I would rather my guys go through every single stock in the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ manually and find the best chart, because it's going to help train their brain to pattern recognition, but more importantly, what momentum look like. How does momentum look? If you do that every single day, you're going to understand and feel how momentum works, what type of stocks it works on, what type of charts it works on, what's the share structure for those type of stocks, what type of sectors, you know, it really works on, you know, so on and so forth. Before, beyond just like, hey, I'm going to turn on a scanner and like something's going to pop up, that will give you a couple ideas, but it is not going to train your brain to like just build intuition.
Right, right. That makes a lot of sense.
Done one way, which is through like the straight up, I'm going through these charts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, shout out to the guys at Trade Ideas. We've had a few of them on here. I use it myself, Kunal. That's why I asked the question. And I think I have struggled at times with probably being too reliant on it at times, because I try and like really dive deep into, you know, programming strategies. I'm just more of an analytical, you know, I come from poker. I used to model poker hands. That's kind of my, you know, I try and eliminate human weakness as much as possible. You know what I'm saying? If that makes sense. But I think at times I have been way too far on that. I have to find that blend between man and machine. And I think your approach, the way you're going about it, like you said, you're really diving into it, getting that that feel, that hands-on approach, which I'm trying to incorporate a better, you know, that's the evolution as my trader right now, is just really combining the two.
So like when you're doing, like, for example, like you can get trade ideas. Now I'm not talking about the program, but like actual trade ideas from like a million different sources, right? Like if you need 10. The whole purpose of like going through a scanning routine at night and like really going through it deep is not necessarily just to find trading ideas. You know, when you go through and you flip through like your different scans, like I use TC2000 to flip through my charts. So I like run, you know, like you run a top gainer scan, top loser scan, XYZ pattern scan, maybe you flip through, maybe you have a list of like 200, 300 names you always follow. When you go through like that progression every day, mm-hmm. what it's also doing is giving you a pulse of the market.
Yeah, right.
You know, when you flip through that many charts, whatever is happening in the indexes or what's happening in the indexes. You know, the indexes can be masked by like what's happening with Apple, right? When you flip through that many stocks, like you're training your brain to how momentum works, how pattern works, what it really looks like, how it feels, and building that intuition. But you're also getting a very keen pulse of the market. Like what type of stocks are actually moving right now? What type of patterns are actually working? So like patterns themselves are just patterns. Well, they have to be used in certain ways and at certain times and in only in certain markets. So like if you were trading XYZ pattern and you learned that from a book, well, there's a chance that pattern, no matter how good it is, only works in like 10% of market situations. So like you have to go, you have to know what phase of the market like you're even in. So when you're doing that like kind of deep dive of going through a million charts, now you have like this keen pulse of like what's happening in the market. And you have the inherent feel for what patterns are working, what type of stocks they're working on. I mean, there's some certain types that only mega cap stocks are going, right? Certain types of markets, mid caps are going. Certain times, there's certain markets, like for the last 2 years, like only tech stocks are really worth even playing, right? Like if you try to trade retail stocks or your oil stock or retail stock shows up in your scan, like it could look all juicy, but we know what they're going to do.
Yeah, right.
Right? Like we know what they're going to do. So like, you know, but you need those reps to do that. Like if you have, if you're brand new, you got two identical chart patterns, but one is in a retail stock like Macy's and another one is in a freshly new tech company that IPO'd in 2019. Mm-hmm. Like what has the chance of moving 20, 30% over the course of a week? Well, the pattern and the stock could look the same, but we both know, like we all know, right? This is gonna move like 1% a day with no rhyme or reason, but like a hot tech IPO that shows that same pattern, that thing could explode. You might get a double out of it. But how do you know that unless you actually sit there and do that work every single day? That's why you futures traders, you got lucky, man. You start sitting there staring at that M&Q and you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah, well, that's been JJ. That's been your one big thing, right? Is like you always preach it, like, hey, sitting watching the same thing every day. You get the feel. You get the rhythm.
Yeah,
of it, right?
For me, I understand. I mean, I used to manipulate 30 different stocks at the same time. I had 30 level twos, right? I had, you know, market makers. They were my chess pawns, right? I would line them up. The retail would come in. I get shown first bid. Right. I take the market up, down, fill this guy. Don't fill this guy because I know he's short. That sort of thing. Right. I'd have lookout bids all over the place. But, you know, trying to calm down and stuff like that, there's enough liquidity in the ES market that you can do quite well. And it's calm for me. Right. And I don't like to have to chase 30 different stocks. I do, however, have found that I kind of got into equities a little bit in December. And I found like a couple of groups of fund managers. And their deals really move nicely and their price action's nice. And the price action now in these under $10 deals isn't bad because you don't have guys like me out there stealing order flow, right? So it's very family friendly, I find, the markets now compared to where they were when I was banging around manipulating stuff.
Hey, so
do you have like specific hours like that you limit yourself? I mean, when you're trading the futures or like, you're like creeping around like late night, like early morning.
Well, I live in a place called Saskatchewan. We get winter here 10 months out of the year. It's minus 50. So I'm in front of the screen a lot, right? Oh. So, yeah, you know, I'm around at Globex. I'm around, you know, I start at about 4:30 in the morning. And I'll look at deals too. I'll look at stocks. But I like to find the way I was taught how to trade an equity. Well, first of all, what we do is you'd find a deal being run by good proper villains and you go buy their stock at a discount, buy a couple of million shares at a 30% chop and wait for them to run it, right? That's how we used to trade, right?
Sure.
But this other way is it's a little different. So I'm really fascinated to hear you guys talk because Ray's really jumped into the equity side of things now and he's using the scanners and all this and that whole retail trading, you know, using charts and patterns. I never did that because I found market profile right away when I went to retail.
Ah,
right. I got the candle wax charts for me, I can build the chart so you guys will come and I can sell you stock, but interpreting them, I'm just learning how to do that now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's good. No, I'm glad this came up, Kunal, because this is, hearing that from you, it's good because this is something I've been really trying to find that balance because I think I've been going a little overboard. Like you were mentioning how people can go overboard with the scanners, just play whatever comes to the scanner. Because I'm like, oh, you know, trusting the math. But the way you just broke it down there makes perfect sense. Another thing I want to ask you, right, which I can relate to you. I've heard you refer to yourself as a gunslinger. It can lead to overtrading, perhaps too much aggression at times. How do you rein that in? How do you rein in some of the negative attributes that come up with that style?
You know, that's actually a great question. And this is like, this goes like a long way to like the trading psychology of it, mm-hmm. which I find like almost all like suspect for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's like a new age, and this is like, I think because of the millennials and the vegans or something.
Zen but trader.
Like now everybody has, you know, mommy problems and daddy problems, and that's their reason they can't trade, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the trading psychology is like taking over. So it's like,
oh,
You overtrade, you got daddy issues. You need to do some, you need to do some deep breathing and some meditation.
Oh,
and you know, all this. And it's true. Like, I read a lot of trading psychology. I met Dr. Steinberger probably like a dozen times. So he's like amazing.
And he's
been on our podcast. Yeah.
He's the one that's like really official. But I think now, like, everything has become like trading is all mental, and they forget that like all trading really comes, most of trading still comes from having an edge. Yep. And where things have gone to is it's like trading psychology, because social media has dumbed down trading to such a degree that now everything can be blamed on trading psychology. But exactly. A lot of it actually has to do with markets are tough. You're trading against the smartest, most crooked, most well-capitalized, disgusting humans on the face of the earth. God bless them.
Hey, those are my brothers and sisters. Take it easy.
God bless them. But if you think like because you do some yoga and some all of a sudden you're going to go toe-to-toe with somebody that's been doing this for 20, 30 years that's got endless bankroll.
Yeah.
And guess what? This whole trading psychology, I got to have discipline thing, is just a huge misnomer for the fact that people do not have actual ways where they can attack all different types of markets with all different types of strategies. Like when I do my class, it's like 60 days long. Why? Because you can't learn this stuff in like a DVD or 2 days. Or
a DVD, seminar, yeah.
Right?
Like, true.
I always wanted to have the DVDs. Like, do you physically get a DVD? I would do a chargeback if I didn't get one. I can do these DVDs when it's online.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Psychology thing has gotten in the way of the fact that people don't actually have a statistical and probability edge in what they do. And so then it dives back into the discipline, yoga, vegan stuff.
I vent about this all the time. I go, it's not trading psychology. It's because you don't know what you're doing. You're speculating in a business you don't know anything, you know nothing about, right? Learn a little bit about the business. There is a business going on behind the pretty charts.
Yeah.
Right?
So, in general, I'm a gunslinger. That's just how I trade. But I had this guy's a wonderful man. I work with this gentleman, Dr. Andrew Menneker. He was a trading psychologist. He also did some stuff with the FBI, like awesome guy. And I was trying to scale up my size, essentially. Like I was profitable for a long time, but I was having trouble getting over like X amount of dollars per day.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I'm like, I'm big time canal, right? I need to be big time canal. I got to figure out how to get there. Yeah, I worked with them like a long time at like $300 an hour. Good Lord. and he actually became a really good friend of mine. But even like he's had me do this WUSA stuff. And, he had me attach this thing to like my ear. I guess in your ear, like you can measure your heartbeat on the ear really well. So then it would go to my iPhone. So he said, so it's like called heart math or whatever. So he was going into this thing. He's like, attach this to your ear while you're trading. He says, if it rolls red, which you'll do a few times a day, like this spacer will come off with pictures of flowers or whatever. Stare at it, breathe with it. And you go back to green. When you're back into green, your heart's calmed down. You'll make better trading decisions than obviously if you're redlined. And this is true for 99% of people. He looked at my thing and he goes, holy shit, you were redlined the whole day.
Hey.
And I'm like, what, was that bad? Like, shit, I don't know how, is that bad? He goes, dude, you're basically near heart attack the whole day. Like most people go red, like if they're overtrading or they have too big of a position. Mine was from front to back. I was redlined the whole day. I'm like, doc, I had a great time today. Yeah, like I was depressed and suicidal for half of it, but and it was really interesting.
Oh, jeez.
What he did teach me from that was how to calm yourself real quickly. Because in the beginning, if you're redlined like that, where you're like heart is beating, like, say, 130 beats or 140 beats a, you know, a minute. You're like, you're up there, right?
Oh, and yeah.
It helped, like, kind of just like, at first it would take me like 30 minutes to calm down and go green.
Yeah.
That would, and then once you'd like do it for a while, like I could do it in like 30 seconds, which was cool.
Nice.
Obviously, if you're running hot, yeah, like you're probably going to go commando on a stock. Mm-hmm. And so that was like, you know, that was interesting. But, you know, one of the things that he had told me at the end was kind of like, he's like, you know, because finally he got me to calm down, be more disciplined in terms of, you know, certain things so I could like scale up my size properly. And then it was just making me into like this giant, I don't even want to say, but like, you know, giant something, you know, 5 years ago I could have said it. Now I can't. But he just turned me into a giant wuss. Yeah, like now, I was turning down trades I normally would because I'm like, okay, let me check my thing. Usa. And I'm like, come on, serenity now.
Oh, like serenity now.
Serenity now in this whole time. So then like my P&L was actually going down a little bit. But now, I, you know, obviously I was taking less trades. I was more disciplined. I was a little bit less stress-free. But my P&L was down. And we were like trying to find this happy medium. And even he was at the end. He's like, you know, I didn't know if this was even biologically possible. He's like, you're an animal, man, like a real one. And I'm like, I know. And he's like, you know, you should really embrace that. I've been telling people my whole life. And so what we ended up doing was something completely different. Okay, like we're not going to, you know, yoga this out of me. But what we're going to do is put some technological and structural, you know, risk management things in that take it out of my hands. So, you know, for example, and I still use this to this day, I have a max loss on my account.
Okay.
So I can only lose so much per day. So if I see an opportunity and I go commando on this thing, like I go monk because I think this is it, you know what? I'll go monk. And if it, you know, like if I was really too zealous and like I took a chunk off of it because I was early or late, it's going to lock me out of my account and market order me out of my positions after a certain amount of loss. So like every blue moon, that devil comes out, but the devil usually works for me. But that's with all aggressive traders. The devil usually works for you except that one time out of 10 where it gets away from you. And then, right, you lose so much money that it kind of eclipses the 9 times that you were aggressive.
Right.
So I found like a sweet spot of like, I know exactly how much I can lose before I really get crazy and, you know, that I probably won't be able to make back. And so I keep a max loss on there. And as soon as I, you know, it's out of my hands. As soon as it hits that, like, you know, the broker's market ordering me out of this and I'm gone. Like it's the platform shut down for the day. And that actually helps. So, and I have other risk management kind of protocols in place because I work with my friends, you know, my childhood best friends. They're also, you know, employees of my business and stuff. So I have other protocols in place to kind of keep me out of trouble because I found like, man, I got a great dad. I got a great mom. I don't got psychological issues. Like, yeah. I'm aggressive and I'm sometimes an over trader and I have to find ways to limit that without actually taking away from what I'm really good at, which right. is when I see it, I pounce and I want to pounce. I need to pounce, you know, that's I'm a hunter, but I can't let that destroy my account. So I put those max losses on. You know, there's other things I'll do in my software, depending on how I'm trading in terms of like maybe even a max on how many shares I can have of stocks. So like if I'm trading, you know, a little bit, if I'm trading really well, you know, I may increase that. And if I'm trading like not so well, I'll start decreasing that so that like, you know, my risk per trade is just inherently buckled down, even though I know I can't maybe control myself during the trading day. I've now set these parameters in to keep me out of trouble.
Mm-hmm. That was good. It was good, Kunal. You stopped yourself before the cancel culture could have been coming for the Bulls on Wall Street.
Oh, no. I know better than that.
Yeah. No, different. I guess different nowadays. So Kunal, on the opposite end of the spectrum, what do you say to your students who are scared to pull the trigger?
Ooh, that's a really good question because, you know, half the people are scared to pull the trigger and the other half don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Pulling the trigger and they pull it too many times.
Yep.
So there's two aspects of, you know, pulling the trigger. You know, number one, some people are afraid to pull the trigger because they're trading with money they can't lose. So if that's the case, don't trade.
You shouldn't be trading. Yeah, exactly.
Don't trade or open a micro futures account, right? Put $1,000.
Exactly.
$1,000 and put in $2,000. That will ruin your life. Do something like that. That's okay. You lose $2,000 trading, you know, some MNQs. Yeah. Stinks, but it will not define you. Don't trade money that you can't afford to lose. You know, that's one of the reasons people are afraid to pull the trigger. The second part where people are afraid to pull the trigger, it goes back to they do not actually have an edge that they can quantify and qualify in the market with a reasonable, right, confidence.
Exactly. Meaning
they've watched some classes, but have they really done the work? And then have they actually seen the work? Meaning like for example, like I teach class at night, but then after class, like I trade in front of my students in the mornings and into the afternoon, whenever I'm just done trading. Not so they can have my stock picks. You know, that has nothing. I trade in front of them so that they can have confidence in the methodology. This works. And you know what? There's days it doesn't work. But like we do, like, you know, I always do a class after the market closes of, you know, going back through the trades, like what went right, what went wrong. And that what really they'll see is that when I lose, it has nothing to do with the methodology. It's usually because I, you know, screwed something up. I put my stop in the wrong place, did this, I chased it, so on and so forth. But hey, it would have worked if I stuck to my rules. You know, now they can see like, okay, this guy's making money most days of a week. Like he's grinding it out like a job, like, a, you know, like how, exactly. Do you, how do you be a professional?
Yeah, right?
Like,
it is a business.
I don't wake up and just roll in and like, you know, like a, get some like $2 low float stock and it goes to 12. I mean, 100 grand. My marketing guy, Photoshop a P&L and right, post it on Twitter and I'm ready to go. Like how does like somebody that's just a professional go and make $2,000, $1,000, whatever it might be, you know, and like going through that process. That will give them the confidence to pull the trigger. And they'll also get the excitement because, like, when I, at least when I'm trading, man, we got, you know, we got the Bruce Springsteen on. We got the Rocket in the Free World. I don't know. We listen mostly, like, you know, God Bless America type songs. And we go for it in the morning. Like, and they, you know, they see the fun of it.
They got it.
Like, hey, trading is supposed to be fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not, yeah, I mean, what's, yeah, there's too many people who are too serious. I think a lot of these people that are on Twitter whining about, manipulation, why is the market going up? It's like, because you're losing. Yeah. That's why you're upset. That's why you're ranting.
And honestly, and I got to jump in because, you know, it's easy for the older guys, especially who's worked in the business, to kind of get bitter and rant. And Ray, you know, Ray pointed that out early when we started working together. So I really try and avoid that. It's like, yeah, the market's crazy. Yeah, you know, all the paper's locked up and they're not selling it. Yeah, it's not really two-sided, but hey, let's trade it, right? Let's not sit around bitching and moaning. Let's actually put some trades on.
I mean, we're here to make money. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like that's my number one focus. I don't know. I mean, right? Like I could care less what the Fed's doing, et cetera, et cetera. How am I going to profit from this?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, and algorithms, I love them.
Yeah. I mean, inherently, yeah. Like I want to short all sorts of stuff and slaughter everything because like, yeah, people are, you know, like struggling. There's no, you know, jobs and stuff, but that's not really, you're not seeing that setup. So what can I do? Yes, I love to play the Grim Reaper because when the market crashes, it crashes so fast.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a bit.
You know, it's an ego thing. Everyone's like, oh, you know, the end's going to come. All it's weird. You see it all over Twitter, you know, like sell will come. It's like, okay, man, you know, it's a market. You're supposed to sell, you know.
Yeah. They're going to do it. It's going to do what it's going to do. But we have to always disassociate, you know, what's happening.
Exactly. Exactly.
The real world, like what's happening in, you know, in the stock market, because the stock market, you know, it's like you're living in, you know, you're living in a bubble.
Well, you're living in a world run by guys like me, and, you know, we have an agenda, right? And, you know, the reason the market exists is for us to move our paper to you, right? Thus exiting our investment. It is an exit mechanism, right? You're exiting into liquidity.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, this is the way I look at it, right? Is like, these people think they can, like, interpret the news, they can interpret this data, economic data, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think a retail person can do that in an efficient manner, right?
You can't hit it that fast.
There's no way, right?
It's tough. That's.
I mean, you're playing a losing game. I feel like there's no edge there. There's no edge there.
You can't. You know, an algo will execute 100 times before you even click.
There are some really good news traders out there, but they've honed that.
But minority, yeah. Right? Like, I mean, that's got to be such a small percent.
Of course. I mean, you know, every edge is a minority in trading.
And yeah,
some really, really good news traders. They can sit there, look at a news press release, boom, they pop into the balance sheet real quick. Oh, this is a pump. They got to raise money. Blah blah blah. They got a shelf on the way. They got an ATM that's already been activated. You know, and they already know. They can sit there in 20 seconds and do that.
Registration statement effective.
But, you know, how many people can read 20 pages of documents, analyze it within seconds?
Exactly.
It would take a lot of practice because you have to know exactly, right, what to look for, what to highlight. Yeah. It's just a shortcut. It's like that's why people use patterns, right? It's essentially a pattern is you're not necessarily like not doing any analysis. It's just taking the 15, 20 variables
right.
that you normally would be looking at and kind of putting them in a certain look. And that's right. All, you know, at least good pattern recognition. That's really what it is. Any given stock, like if you're trying to trade it, there's like 15, 20 variables that are moving around very, very quickly that you have to analyze. So, you know, the beauty of like, you know, people that are really good at certain patterns is it's essentially taking all of those things and putting them in a checklist that you can really analyze instantly.
Right, right. I mean, I think that should be one of our main objectives is to simplify things for ourselves, correct?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so Kunal, this is going to be a layup question here. But I think the vast majority of people would agree with me that having a mentor, being a part of a community is a net positive, you know, not just even in trading, but probably all facets of life. Tell us why.
Yeah. In all businesses, you know, there's like certain edges. You know, for example, like if you're just graduated college, right? And you get a job at Ford Motor Company and the vice president, who's like not a scumbag, but like actually a good guy, you know, takes you under your wing your first day and shows you the ropes. He's been there 20 years. Versus, you know, another kid in the division went to the same college as you, same background as you, same smarts as you. He's in another division. You know, his boss is a fire-breathing asshole. So you got one guy who takes you under the wing. The other guy is a fire-breathing asshole. Where do you have an edge? You know, there's an edge in there somewhere of like, hey, somebody actually looking after you can help out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other side of it is if you don't find the right one, of course, it's actually probably going to be a net negative for you.
Right.
You know, and that's, you know, the social media has kind of changed everything because you're seeing like a lot of kids with acne that all of a sudden are teachers. And guys, your trading mentor has acne or braces or they have like a code name, like you should be in Top Gun. Run.
Exactly.
If you can't figure out his full name, his address, you don't have his cell number, then run. OK, because otherwise, you know, that person's just a vendor, not a, really a mentor. And mm-hmm. there's a little bit of a difference in it. You know, mentor is really something, when you're in a jam, you call them up. You know, man, bad mm-hmm. day. And granted, like, I'm the last person you want to call when you have a bad day, because I'm going to be like, why? No, I'm just kidding. But then there's the other part of it is, which is, you know, let's dissect this.
Exactly.
And I always know, I always have like a three-pronged attack, three-pronged attack on it. It's like, why? What the fuck happened? Then, okay, how can we get better? So then the last part is, right, like, let's motivate them to do better, right? Mm-hmm. So they leave on a good note. And, you know, you have to be able to get a hold of somebody to do that. Like, if you mm-hmm. can't, you know, if you can't FaceTime or Skype, like, you know, like, text don't count, right? Like, if you can't FaceTime or Skype or call.
Exactly.
Mentor, yeah. And guess what? You just bought a class. You're a vendor. He's a vendor. And that's what it is. So what? But yeah. There is an advantage to mentorship, but real mentorship is like probably a little bit more tricky to find than, you know, than we would think sometimes. And that's like kind of the shitty part. You know, what kind of happens is like, you know, there's a handful of people that can do it. And then now like, man, social media is cool. And I actually got to give it to them because like people that got like no skills at like 19 years old, they got acne, they got braces, they got good at Photoshop, can just pop up like $500,000 P&Ls, make like a lot of money. You know, inherently, like the old school side of me is like, man, that's a nice grift right there. Old school side of me is like, man, that's a nice grift, right?
You know, it is a grift. It's a nice grift, yeah.
I'm like, I'm born in New Jersey, man. You know, like a nice grift.
Yeah.
You give them the props even though you hate them. Like, you give them the props. Like,
you know, three card Monty without the marble. Yeah.
I had, you know, like a customer like trying to, you know, scam like some, you know, free classes or whatever. And I was like, man, this guy really ran an elaborate scheme to get like a $500 like chat room thing. I got to give it to that guy, man. That's a lot. That's a nice grift he ran.
That's right, right? There is something, you know, you can appreciate a good criminal, right?
Appreciate it. Like, he's a scumbag, but you can appreciate it. And, you know, I always sit there and say, man, I hope people don't fall for it, but boy, that's crazy. I gotta give it to him for the balls on that kid.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's got no skills. I saw one of these guys, man, he claimed he turned $2,000 into $1.1 million in like 3-4 months or whatever.
Oh wow.
Like watching his video and he's like, okay, so this candle, it's red. So if it's red, it's like it goes down. And then if it goes like a candle's green, guys, this means it's like the stock could go up. And I'm like, what the fuck? Come on. Somebody call the police. It is run a grift of a grift. And his only problem, his where he fucked up is he should not be making videos. He's too ugly. Like, straight up grifting on your social media.
Oh, like, man.
1,000 to 1 million in 3 months, small account challenge. Like, don't get on any YouTube lives. Don't do any webinars. Like, you just, you know, sling your thing. Because good Lord, I was like throwing up watching this, cracking up. It's kind of like Joe Biden, right? If Joe Biden says nothing, shows up to no debates, just sits in his basement, he's going to win. But if Joe Biden decides to like show up and say, hey, I'm going to do a debate with the Trumpster. And then all of a sudden, like things look different. But he says nothing. He says nothing. Because like, you know, I just read this report. 50% of America thinks Joe Biden has dementia. Think about that. Dementia means he's not there. Right? Like my grandpa Dementia, he was not there. He was not my grandpa, right? It was like a space alien magician. If Joe Biden says nothing, he wins. Same thing with some of these hoaxes, man. If they're going to do it,
yeah.
Don't talk.
Well, it's like when you're working in the boiler room, right? You ask that closing question and then you shut up and you let them, you know, you let the mark decide.
No doubt.
But yeah, find you a good mentor. Yeah, because I think it's that. Yeah, it's the what is that adage? Learn from others' mistakes so that you don't have to make them.
I think so, and you know, it's you got to find one that's been through the ropes a little bit. I think you know, find so there's a difference in you can be the best trader in the world, but it doesn't mean you can teach anybody. You know, there's like a they're two different skill sets.
Yeah,
very true.
Like me from 9:30 to like say 2 p.m. is like okay, like I'm Rambo, right? And then after that, like I have to be somebody different because like Rambo doesn't make a good teacher. He's a good killer. Right? Like he's not gonna be a good teacher. Those are two very different skill sets. So you know, the key is like you can't just go in and say, like, okay, this guy had like a $500,000 P&L that, you know, his wife photoshopped for him and be like, oh, he's a good teacher, right? So you got to really go through and do the gamut. Watch the YouTube videos. Watch whatever free stuff they have, you know. DM them. Text them. But, like, actually track them down. Like, I take calls all day. Like, people are like, I tracked you down. You put your phone number on a YouTube video. I'm like, yeah, man. What's up? What you need? What you want to talk about?
Yep.
So, Kunal, I see you guys have a crypto section on on Bulls. So, I'm curious: is it are you guys trading it, teaching it just for a profit, or is decentralization concept is that something that you believe in?
Oh man, crypto's a turd. I'll be honest. Nah, it's a huge turd. There was a pump in 2008, and it was amazing, and it was a rare opportunity for trading that like you just don't find because you have like moves that are like 30%, 40%, 50%.
Yeah. Insane.
They're happening, insane. And they're happening in the middle of the night, in the morning. There's a very, very opportunity to just trade tickers. Like, you know, BTC is ES and ETH is the NQ. And this one is this, and when they're moving around like that, that 2018-2017 was a fantastic time. There were no pros in that market. None. Like I'd be sitting there watching the tape on this stuff. First of all, there is no tape because there's very little liquidity too, which is awesome. You know, everybody's like liquidity.
I'm like, that's okay, I'll make my own.
When there's no liquidity, you can read the tape.
And thank you for saying that. My God. Thank you for saying that. Because I keep telling people that. They're like, what does that mean? Like, okay, good.
Yeah. Guess what? Stock does 200 million shares a day in volume. You can't read the tape. It does a million. You're going to see it a little bit easier. But in crypto, it was like the liquidity was low. There wasn't any pros in it yet, because it was still too risky. And so I was all up in it. And I wasn't about it. Like, I was, like, refused to, like, do it. And I had a couple of students that were, like, took my class, and they're like, oh, we're just using the same patterns like you taught us, but we're doing it in crypto. And I'm like, what? Like, the fake money thing?
The fake money, exactly.
Like, and the kid was, like, you know, like a younger kid, and he's like, no, like, it's cool. And I'm like, electric money, isn't that just what PayPal is? Like, like, I got a PayPal. I'll send you money right now electronically. Like, not right now.
Right. From a guy who's taken companies public, I love the idea of crypto. You don't even have to spend money to print stock certificates, you know, or get lawyers.
So it's pretty, it was pretty cool, but it was, the pump was amazing, and then I was shorting it on the way down, which is also amazing. Mm-hmm. But now, like, I think it's probably going to be a couple of years where it's just digest. I don't know the future of it. You know, I'm a price action guy in general anyway, so.
Right.
Like, I'm trying to do these MNQs. Well, the market's been gapping up every day, so I'm like, man, this market's been gapping up every day. I better learn these micro futures, you know. Wherever the action is, like, I'm trying to figure out how I can get in.
Right.
Cool. But like, in terms of like having a dog in the bone of like, I love the technology, guys. Yeah. Your commander. These are great projects. Okay, the CEOs of these companies, they're fantastic. They're great people. No, I don't know any. I don't know. They're tickers.
They're tickers. They're
tickers. Exactly. Exactly.
All right. So, all right, Kunal, a couple of rapid fire questions, and then we'll wrap this one up. All right. Any good books you've been reading lately? I don't know if you're a reader or not.
Ooh, so like I do actually read a lot. So I'm not into like these self-help kind of books. Probably noticed, but like I do like, you know, I do a little goose in the gander on, you know, a handful of stuff. I did like, I read this book called by Dave Asprey called like Game Changers, which was kind of pretty cool. It was about what leaders and innovators and mavericks do to win at life. It's like pretty like substantial, you know, it's pretty like standard stuff, but I kind of find it interesting. I hate like nonfiction books. And then another one I read that was actually, it's like, because I'm like obsessed with like Viking stuff and like medieval history. Like all my books I read is like about like pillaging and slaughtering. And I read another book by Jim Quick called Limitless that was like more like a brain training kind of book. I took like one of his speed reading classes because I'm a big reader of fiction books, and like it actually works. Like I can pull through like a 300-400 page book like really quickly. I thought that was actually, I mean, those are pretty, I thought those were pretty epic. Like I like both of those. In general though, like, yeah, I like fiction books. Anything that has to do with Vikings, anything with medieval history, you put a British longbow in my hands. And I'll take out some French soldiers.
Hey, makes sense with the gunslinger mentality. I see it. Yeah, I love history myself. That's one of my probably favorite genres. All right. Interests outside of trading and working out.
Ooh, that's actually good. So I love going to the beach. I'm like outside guy, so beach, boat, like anything, frisbee, like just anything outside that I'm like pretty into. I like all sports pretty much. You'll see me like during the trading day, like I'm watching all these stupid sports shows, like where they just argue with each other. And like, I don't understand what the heck they're talking about. I didn't see the games, but I just love to watch them argue.
Yeah, there's some good. Yeah, there are some good ones. Yeah, some of them are just don't know what they're talking about. I feel like, because I like to bet. I don't know. Do you bet on sports at all, Kunal, or no? You just
no. You know what? No? It's weird. Like I've actually haven't bet in a casino or on sports like maybe ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a casino's cards, like not my thing. I like doing stuff where like I know I can win.
Yeah. Sure. That makes sense. That makes sense.
I like outdoor stuff. I used to really love traveling. Like I've been to like a bajillion countries, trading, traveling, you know, doing like the laptop cafe coffee lifestyle for a while. Mm-hmm. But as I got older, like I don't even really like doing that. Like now the world's like a lot scarier place. Like, I just stay here in the panhandle. I live on the beach anyways and I'll hang out. But I used to love traveling and doing stuff like that. But you know what? Once you guys probably seen this. Once you get older and you're like the single guy that's not married and all your friends are married and you don't have any travel buddies anymore, it's not
exactly.
The bro bang died.
Yeah. Yeah. It's depressing. It's depressing. Are you a Michigan sports fan?
I went to Michigan State due to the substandard grades. But
I'm sorry. I meant just Michigan sports.
Lions, Pistons, Tigers. Stink, and stink.
Yeah.
But I love them all, especially Detroit Lions. It's like, it pains me to watch every game, but I watch it all.
Yeah. I think the Lions, you guys got some offensive talent, at least. Stafford stays healthy. I like the offense.
We have a semi-decent quarterback, but like, this is never really put together. Even the offense usually stinks. Like, even though
I don't get it. I mean, I love the offense. I mean, Galladay, Jones at receiver. If Johnson stays healthy, the back. I think there's some talent.
Yeah, Galladay's awesome. And
he's a baller. Yeah.
That's a tight end last year, like with the seventh pick or whatever.
Hockenson, I think. Yeah.
He wasn't that good, but he was injured half the year. We'll see.
Yeah.
I always see the Lions are going to Super Bowl every year. I make that prediction, but
never. Yeah, that's not going to make you no money. My
dad's been here since like 1975. He's like, I never seen the Lions ever win any games.
Yeah, that's a tough. I'm a Jets fan, so it's not much better for me. But
all right, the Jets are Sam Darnold's good though.
He is. I'm glad you recognize that. Yeah,
he is.
The coaching's terrible.
And you know what? He's actually really young. He's 3 years younger than Baker Mayfield. They were drafted the same year, yeah. Which is like, so he's like, his development is like in the baby stages.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I just think we got to get a new coach, man. I think it's the coaching.
Crazy Eyes Gaze? What, you don't like Crazy Eyes Gaze?
he's sniffing salts on the sideline? What the hell is this guy doing, man?
I like him.
That's nuts. Like,
Eyes Gaze is like, he's the ultimate grifter. I got to give him credit.
Yeah, so he is.
He was Peyton Manning's quarterback's coach when Peyton Manning was at Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Peyton Manning was 40 years old. Like, nobody's coaching him, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Peyton Manning's 40-year-old Hall of Famer, who is also, like, he was known as, like, the cerebral guy.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is coaching Peyton Manning at the age of 40 in his last year in Denver. Mm-hmm. So Adams Gase grifted that experience into, like, I'm going to get two head coaching jobs. He's on the quarterback whisper.
Yeah, the quarterback whisper.
40-year-old quarterback that doesn't want to listen.
You know, I couldn't agree 100% more. It's ridiculous. He gets fired from the Dolphins, and then the Jets hire him. It's ridiculous, man. Like you said, no one's coaching Peyton Manning. That was what he was known for, being like the coach on the field.
He was known as a quarterback whisperer for one good quarterback. He didn't do anything for Ryan Tannehill.
No. Now look at Tannehill. That's the thing, too. The players that move on from him. But, you know, I digress. I'm getting worked up now.
I think Sam Darnold is probably good enough. Like, he's good enough. His talent will probably shine, even though his coaches
I hope.
Might be crazy.
I really hope so. I wouldn't even mind if it's just a bad season, so they move on for Gase and then give Darnold a real shot. But, yeah, I agree. Like, if the quarterbacks are good enough, it'll make up for bad coaching. But, you know, yeah, we'll see. Kunal, do you drink coffee in the morning? Being a guy of high energy. No. This is a serious question because I think about this myself, right? I consider myself a high energy person. What's your caffeine intake in the morning before trading? Because obviously we don't want to be too pumped up, right?
Oh, I'm slaughtering the coffees.
Okay. All right. So do I, but I don't know if that's a bad move or not. You can ask Jay. I mean, express.
Like, I drink coffee at night. I mean, I'm always drinking coffee.
Okay, so it has no effect on you. It's not affecting the trading whatsoever.
I don't even think it gives me any buzz anymore.
Yeah.
I think like that warm, you know, just having something warm, but like it doesn't do it the way it used to. I've been trying all these different kind of coffees too, these mushroom coffees or Focus. They didn't work. Like then they had like these relaxation coffees, like none of them are working.
No?
Oh, no.
Oh, man. You guys remind me of when I was younger. I used to drink so much coffee, and now stupid heart condition. So, I have two cups. That's it for me now. I'm done.
But, no doubt.
Yeah, two cups is solid. I mean, yeah.
Two cups is solid.
That's solid. That's solid. Still all right. All right, Kunal, musical tastes.
Ooh. 80s pop music.
Really?
80s pop music, also 80s country music, and 1995 to 1999 rap music, more like Puff Daddy, Notorious B.I.G. era. Okay. Any music after 2002 stinks. Yeah. I do like classic rock, like from 60s, 70s too. But that's it, like Bob Seger, stuff like that. But otherwise, no. It's 80s pop, 90s rap, and some 80s country.
Okay, that's a good, that's a diverse mix. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. I like that. Like Wu-Tang, Nas, like those, that era, correct?
Nas, very nice. I won't lie, like when I'm trading sometimes I need inspiration, like I will slaughter some Celine Dion.
Hey. Hey, as a proud Canadian, we salute you. Everybody loves Celine.
She's like an American hero, even though she's Canadian. It's amazing. She's so good. So, yeah, when we're in trouble, we need, like, something to work. We go Celine Dion, Cher, If I Could Turn Back Time. And we just
oh, man.
We try to inspire these stocks to do something that often they don't want to do.
You're the tape whisperer. Nice.
The tape whisperer. That's funny, Celine Dion. Wow. I didn't even know. I didn't know she was Canadian. That's okay.
Of course, she is a national treasure.
Shania Twain's Canadian too.
Indeed.
No way. Wow.
Shania Twain. I mean, she's got some lungs on her too.
She does. No, she's really good. She's really good. All right, last one, Kunal. Favorite movie, or you can list a few if you don't have one.
Whoa. Okay. Now, this is actually a very, very tricky question because I have a handful of movies that I watch all the time. Number one, King Arthur with Clive Owen. It's a very shitty movie, but it's got a lot of swords and like cool bow and arrow.
You're medieval. Yeah, you love for medieval. Okay.
Okay.
Number two, Mean Girls.
No, wait, stop.
What is Mean? What is that?
Mean Girls with Lohan. It's a fantastic movie. And then I would go with like number three, The Notebook.
No, stop it. You're joking with me, right?
I'm not. Those are my three. I own them all.
The Notebook?
Oh my God, it's fantastic. Like, who wouldn't want a notebook type of love?
I don't know. I it just has that stigma around it. I don't know. I'm not watching. I don't know. I just
watch it. It'll make you feel like, I mean, if you then you look at your girlfriend and be like,
you're not married, man.
Because I can't duplicate The Notebook, but I'm sorry.
Okay, I gotta watch this movie now. I gotta watch these two movies.
Fantastic. It's fantastic.
Mean Girls and The Notebook. Interesting.
Mean Girls is classic. They got this Indian guy on there. He's like running competitions. It's fantastic. He's like all timer.
Really? Okay, perfect.
That was an interesting list. I did not expect that. Not expecting that one. That's funny. All right. Well, that concludes today's episode of Confessions of a Market Maker. If you guys enjoyed this, please rate and review it for us. If you guys want to learn how to use Market Profile, trade futures, trade equities, JJ and I are in two rooms, microefutures.com. EquitiesETC.com. Kunal, tell the people where they can find you and anything else you'd like them to know.
Yo, you'll be finding me on the streets of Destin, guys. Appreciate you guys having me on. I really enjoyed it. And by the way, confession, I don't listen to podcasts ever because I'm a video guy.
Yep.
But this was fun. You guys are good dudes.
Kunal, appreciate that. It means a lot. We really enjoyed having you on, man. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
All right. And so for Kunal, I'm Paulie Walnuts. He's the gorilla. You stop slow.